Accession number 32330, Reel 1.
Harold, I wonder if you'd be kind enough to give me your name and your age, please.
Harold Edward Locke. I'm 84.
Which branch of the services did you serve in?
Royal Navy.
And your rank when you were taken prisoner?
A boy.
Right. Can you give me some idea of how you got to be in the Far East? What happened?
Well, I joined the Boys' Navy at Ganges when I was 14 years old, and not long after I joined, the war started in Germany, and they broke the service down at Ganges, say from a year to about 6 or 8 months. Then we transferred to Chatham Barracks, and then we sort of volunteered for various ships, and I was on a cruiser first, and was in the Battle of Crete, and we got hammered. And I got awarded the DSM for shooting 2 German planes down. And I got in a lot of trouble over that because as a boy you were not allowed to touch the guns. But anyway, they gave me the DSM, which I never had collected. And after that we got hammered at Crete, that's where it all happened. And when I got back to Alexandria, I transferred at my own volition to a destroyer. But the captain of the cruiser told me I was making a bad mistake. He said, "We don't want to lose you." He said, "We want you to keep on this."
What was the name of the ship?
He said, "We'll push your promotion forward whenever it comes." That was the NIAID, N-A-I-A-D. But anyway, I was only young and I just wanted to see some more of the war and some more of the broad. So I went on this destroyer, the Jupiter. And we went from there to Singapore. And then we got caught up in convoy work. And then the Prince of Wales and the Repulse got sunk. And then we got sent out to sea with about 15 other ships to halt the invasion of Java, mm-hmm. which every ship got sunk, except 4 American destroyers. Mm-hmm. But they didn't enter the battle at all. They just left us. And went straight to Australia. But that'll never be in the papers. Mm. Nobody will ever publish that.
Right.
But the whole 4 went straight from there, and they went straight to Australia, the whole 4, and left us. Things like that don't happen in the papers, do it.
Did you know the names of those ships?
No, I think there's one called the Churchill. But they just went.
Yeah. So what happened to the Jupiter?
We got sunk. We hit something, and the old captain, he told us, he said, "The yachts are far, far too great for us." That was before we left harbour. He said, "I'll use up all the ammunition." He said, "I don't care about Whitehall or anywhere else." He said, "As soon as that ammunition's gone, we're going to Australia." He said, "Oh, so we're going to get sunk." He said, "We take our choice." But anyway, we hit a mine, or they said that was a mine, but I think it was one of these American destroyers fired a torpedo at us. And the captain thought so too, because we were going in line abreast. And we said, if it had been a mine or anything, you know, what the heck was that doing right out in sea, mm-hmm. floating about? Mm-hmm. But that was never proved anyway. And so we got sunk and I swam ashore.
How far off were you?
I thought it was about 7 miles at the time, got shark infested, but Terry White and me went out there 2 years ago and he measured the distance and it was 30 miles.
Really?
So I swam and it took about 2 days, I think. Swam all that night, all the next day, all the next night, and I got ashore on the following morning.
Were you on your own?
Yeah.
So where did you come ashore?
Well, I got ashore and I saw these soldiers on there. I'd never seen a Jap soldier in my life. And I thought they were Dutch at first. I thought myself, thank goodness. But when I got up, those 4 Japanese soldiers. Mm-hmm. And they gave me this shovel to dig me grave. And I thought myself, I'd come all this bloody way and now I've got to dig my own grave. But a voice behind me spoke more or less like American language. And he said, "You're in a tidy muddle here, ain't you?" And I turned around and there's this Jap officer. And he'd been educate in America. He'd been in America for 15 years, he told me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, they're going to shoot you. I said, yeah, I know. No, I looked around, I thought, was that worth getting back in the sea again? Or then they'd gunned, I thought, was that shoot me before I can get down that far? He said, no, so I'm not going to let them do that. And he was the only good chap I saw in all my prison life.
Yeah.
And he saved my life, and he told him that, he said, further up the beach about a mile and a half, he said, some more your men, he said, come ashore on a raft. He said, I've told him to give you water and food and take you up there with the rest.
Right.
And he even shook hands. And I said, as soon as you're gone, I'll shoot. He said, no. He said, they're afraid they're loath to ever disregard an officer. He said, they'd be too frightened.
Right.
Anyway, that's what happened. And they took me up there, and there's some more of our ship's crew up there.
Mm-hmm. But you were glad to see them.
Oh, yeah. And the old captain was up there and all.
Right.
And they got ashore on rafts, and that when the ship went down, and they said, the hell do you swim all that distance?
How old were you at this
16.
Time?
16.
16,
old. Look, I've now still go to school.
Yes, yes.
But,
so what did they do with you when they got you all together?
Well, they put us there, and I was in there about a month, I think. Then after about a month, there were about four died in that time. And they wouldn't feed us, and the old captain went and asked them. He said, we're prisoners of war, and we wouldn't like to be treated as such. And they gave him hell of a beating. Mm. And I thought to myself, well, this is what it's going to be like. And they took us from there into a big camp at Surabaya. I was there for a time, and then they asked for volunteers after a certain time to go to this little island where they said you'd be well fed and be plenty of food there, and then they'd look after us there. So we all volunteered, and away we went, and that's Heruku.
Yeah.
And it was regarded as one of the worst places in all South Asia.
Yes. How long did you spend on Heruka?
Well, you don't know the time, because there's no such thing as watches or anything.
No.
And I estimate about 2 years.
Right. What sort of work were you doing there?
On this building this runway for the planes to land, because I think they were thinking about invading Australia.
Right.
And that wasn't far off New Guinea, actually. Mm-hmm. It's too far to swim, but about 200 or 300 miles, perhaps.
Yes.
And I think that was going to sort of be one of the stopping places on the way to Femi, but the drone never did get built anyway. And they told us that there's a lot of us, and they said, I'll never build a drone on this, because the wind or something was the wrong way. I didn't understand it, but
mm-hmm.
we took notice of what the Air Force people said. We stayed on there for about 2 years, and then we...
What were conditions like there?
Terrible. I was dying. We buried about 10 or 12 every day. We just went round, and I got so bad. We got so hard that me and my two friends, we kept together all the time. And we was taking bets in the morning who would live, who'd still be alive that night.
Yeah.
It got so bad, and so... We almost got as bad as the Japs. We had no feeling or anything.
Yeah.
And it just went on and on, and we kept together, and we went in the jungle at night. So we would have been shot if we'd been caught.
You sneaked out?
Yeah, we went and got the bananas and coconuts and things.
That was very brave.
He was a lawyer. And then they went down with a bad illness.
Did you get any illness, Harold?
Yeah. I had the worst one a lot, really. Because I had a Japanese caught me one day, and I got all these wounds all over my feet and legs.
Yeah.
And he stuck a bayonet in me, and that turned to gangrene.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week later, so I went to see this doctor, Springer. And I think he's about the most marvellous man I've ever seen. And he said to me, he said, oh dear, he said, so young too. He said, all I've got here, he says, a spoon. He said, you'd like to come back. He said, The only thing I can do is spoon all that dead flesh out. He said it'll take about 6 days.
Mm.
He said, and then I shall have to take a bit off your thigh. He said, I've got a razor blade. He said, and I'll have to cut it up and jab it back into that open wound.
Right.
He said, I say, what's the alternative? Because I didn't like the sound of that. He said, you'll be dead in about a fortnight. And I said, oh, well, I'll take that. So that's what I did.
So you skin grafted?
Yeah, so I went every day, the same for 6 days, and then he cut this bit of skin off here with a razor blade, and he cut up in a lot of pieces, and he got a little sort of stick and jabbed it into the wound.
And it regrew?
Yeah, he said that the main hope you've got on your side is your youth.
Yes.
He said it'll probably might take. He said, but I've tried on other people, he said, and I haven't succeeded yet. So,
how extraordinary. What nationality was Dr. Springer?
Dutch.
Right.
Am I still on here?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Important to know.
Hmm.
So, you're on Heruku. Were there any other POW with you?
No. It was the first ship to land there. And that's pouring the rain, I always remember, it's monsoon weather. And we expect to see some huts and things where we're going to sleep, but there's no such thing. And
you were saying you
we were the first on Heruku, and we was the last ship to leave.
Mm-hmm.
When we left, there was nobody left on the island.
Right.
But coming home, we also encountered our share of luck again. We was on the Maris Maru.
That was from Heruku back to Java?
Yeah.
Right.
And it took, I forget how many days, but 7 days to get to this island, and it took 67 days to get back.
Why was
and,
that?
And we threw about 340 bodies over the side. Other than what was on the ship, because when we got on there, that was really hot. That was over 100 degrees, and the holds were full of stuff, what the Japs had thingies, and we just had to lay around on top of the ship. Wherever we could find, and there's nowhere to sit or anything.
No.
So the people start dying almost straight away, and we just, the Japs didn't know, we just threw the bodies over the side of the ship. We couldn't bury them or nothing.
Yeah.
And couldn't give them a sea burial because there's nothing to weigh them down, and there's nobody to give us service or anything. So we just picked them up, and as they died, they went over the side. And the old captain of the ship, because the Americans were sinking all the ships, what was visible in them days, but he went a little way and then he stopped and then he went a little way further.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept looking at all the way back, and it took about 67 days. And Lord Russell, he wrote a book about things. He said in his book, that was the worst sea journey of all time.
Yes.
It was in his book. And when we got back to Java, I don't think any of us could sort of walk or anything, and they just chucked us in the back of a lorry and took us to one of the prison camps and then chucked us off in a heap. And
do you remember where you landed? Did you land back at Surabaya?
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So your lorry journey, was that a long way from Surabaya?
No, we can't remember it really, because they chucked us in this lorry, you know, and some were still alive, some were dead.
Right.
Then they got this camp, they just offloaded us and left us there. And that was all about 10 days before we come back to consciousness.
Right. Did anybody look after you?
No.
No. So it was the luck of the draw whether you survived that.
Mm. And then after about 10 days we slowly pulled round and the biggest...
You were gradually...
Mm. And gradually we came back to sort of some kind of normality and... We found, so we learnt our lesson not to volunteer for anything anymore. So we gradually pulled round, and the biggest thing we found, we could have a drink of water.
Right.
And that was worth any food.
Mm.
No food amounted to the amount of water.
Yes.
You know, when you're really, really dry.
Yes.
That's so easy when you're at the water like that to drink seawater.
Mm.
But I don't think it's suitable, is it? Because no. I don't know what I do to you, but some people say it drives you crazy. Another one said,
yes,
make your thirst worse.
Mm. So you're back in Java. What happened to you then?
Well, we stayed in this camp, and we sort of, as I say, we got back to some kind of normality, and we're still alive, us three. That's all in the book about my mates.
What were your friends' names? Do you want to name? Fine.
I know where one of them is.
Okay.
Because you read in the book, we shook hands when we got to England, and we said, friendship, look, this will never happen more in our lifetime.
Yes.
So we left each other, and I have been in, well, we have got now the last year or two, so the one lived in Immigan near Grimsby.
All right.
And he sent me a Christmas card one year, mm-hmm. out of the blue. So I sent him one back now.
Right.
Just to know we're still alive.
So, you and your friends in this camp, what were you involved with? What did they get you working?
Yeah, they sent us down to the docks unloading stuff, but that was easy because we could pilfer a lot of stuff, you know, so that all helped.
Yes.
And the Dutch, they weren't sort of very helpful. There's antagonism all the time, you know, between the Dutch and the English. And
yes.
So he used to, if a Dutchman had something, we used to go and take it away from him.
Mm-hmm.
That's cruel, because that Dutchman has probably saved his life. That's the way we got. We just like, well, as bad as the Japs, really.
Right.
There's no feeling, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him chop this man's head off, as I say, this old lady, and I didn't move as an inch.
No.
We just saw his head hanging with the leaders of his neck or something, but it didn't move us.
No.
It should have done, shouldn't it?
You'd seen such sights, hadn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I was about 17 then, I think, 18. Good life.
Did they move you again in Java?
No.
You stayed there until the
yeah,
war was
yeah, there's
over.
A lot of voluntary work went on, you know. You volunteered to go to somewhere else, another nice camp where there's plenty to eat and that, and they put some up to Sumatra. I think Aldous went to Sumatra, I'm not sure. And they sent some up on the railway to displace them what would die it. But there was unlimited source of labour.
Was Dr. Springer with you in Java?
No. Yeah, he came back to Java. He kept alive. He got back, same as our captain did.
Yes.
But I don't know what happened to him after that, because we never lost sight of him after that.
You didn't keep him in the same camps. People like Dr. Springer, you described before how he saved your foot.
And saved his life, actually.
And therefore saved your life. Yeah. What sort of recognition did people like him get?
Well, they got something up London. I've always, well, two or three times I've tried to find out. But he did get some kind of recognition for his services to the prisoners of war.
Good.
Because he came, I don't know if he made a special trip to come to London, but he went there, and I know, I think it was Mac who told me, there was quite a big gathering up there to meet him, welcome him.
Right.
But in that journal, there's not a word said about Springer. Even Aldous don't mention Springer.
Right.
And he was the sort of the key figure in the whole camp. Everybody knew Springer.
Yes. Yes, and he must have saved many lives.
Oh, goodness, yeah. But somebody like Aldous, they didn't even mention him. He's so busy thinking of himself, I suppose.
Mm.
As long as Mr. Aldous is there.
Mm. Tell me, can you remember hearing that the war was over?
No, that's quite a long time after that, really, because we're still in this camp. Oh, that was almost the 15th, wasn't it? We're still in there all through September and October.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in this camp. But it took us a long while to sort of digest the fact that there's no more war.
Yes.
Because the Cumberland come up there and they came ashore and well, they crowed when they saw us. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of stuff coming into the camp then. Every day, sort of supplies and things were coming in, and we didn't mind being there, actually.
Yeah.
We thought to ourselves, well, we can't go home and look like yesterday. doctors come ashore and give us injections about four times a day to pump us up, because they said we're going to send you to Australia. And in the meantime, with all my youth, I was more or less a leader. And they followed what I'd done, and I said, no, no. I said, we're not going to Australia. I said, we're not flying home. I said, we're going home by boat. I said, I don't care when we go. I said, but we're certainly not going to Australia. I said, we didn't land all this time to go to some other foreign country. So we want to go back to our country.
Yeah.
And we got home early December, I think it was. And the war had finished in August.
What ship took you home?
Cilicia.
Ah, you're on the Cilicia.
Yeah. I think I can't remember the actual time when we got back. That must have been November, December time.
Right.
Have you heard some more about the Cilicia?
Yes, I have. Did you come into Liverpool?
Yeah.
Was there any reception committee for you there?
A little.
Right.
Not much. But I always remember there was some stupid lieutenant doctor there, and not very old, and he said, he got us together, he said, welcome back and all that rubbish, and he said, I've got some rather bad news. He said, I might as well tell you now. He said, you all got about 4 years back pay. He said, if I was you, I'd take that money and go on a world cruise or do something. He said, because nobody can guarantee after 10 years any of you will be left alive after what you've been through. I thought that was a bloody good welcome, that is.
Indeed.
I don't know how I'd like to see him now. He's probably dead.
Was he, were you taken from the ship to a medical centre? Or was this on board ship he was telling you this?
He came on the ship.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
But there's no medical centre. There was nothing for us. Nothing, not a thing.
What happened to you when you...
And they gave us a handful of money each and told us to go home and they'd contact us when they want us.
Yes.
And that's all we have. That was our reception home.
So where did you go from the ship? Did you just go home?
I kept with my two mates for a bit, couple of days, I think it was. And then I caught a train, went home.
Where was home?
Sudbury, here.
In Sudbury?
Yeah.
While you were a prisoner of war, did you have any word from your family?
No. Presumed dead, my mother was told.
So when did you get to tell them you were coming home?
Oh, after we got released, I think, when we were still in Java.
Oh, right.
They came in and took all the names of the people who were left alive, and they said they'd sort of inform the families.
Yeah.
You know, the ones who were left alive.
So your mother knew then to expect you back?
Yeah.
What a relief for her.
Mm-hmm. I always remember when I come home to the Sudbury station, there was an ambulance outside, and the bloke said, I've been waiting for you. I said, what for? He said, take you home. I said, no, I don't think so. He said, what do you mean? I said, you can take my cases and head home. I said, I'm going to walk. I want to see what the town was like after all that time. So I walked home. Yeah, it was quite an experience, really.
What,
I got home, I think I was 20 or 21.
And what reception committee was there at home for you?
Well, all my brothers were there, and my mother was there crying, and all the tears.
Had your brothers all been serving away?
Four of them had.
Anybody in the Far East?
No. My other brother, who's in the Navy, he got nearest. He went to there. Not to get the prisoners back, but he went to some island. He's at the side of India, anyway, on the way there.
Right.
But I think what saved me in the prison camp was a hard upbringing. Are you still on?
Yes.
Oh.
You want to
cling
back into civilian life? So how old are you at home with your family, and there's been much rejoicing, I should say.
Yeah, and then I found two more friends of mine who'd been at the Far East. I'd been on the railway, and we had a talk, and we didn't know what to do. One of them had nightmares at night, and I said, the only thing to do, I said, really, I says to go on a drink. So for 3 months we've drunk. Mm-hmm. Every day we've drinking. None of us were heavy drinkers. And I didn't want to take much, and we squared on the Monday and come home on the Friday just to change the clothes and that. And we slept in the graveyards, we slept all over the place. Just to keep together.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 months my brother had a wood business, tree falling business.
Yeah.
And he said, you've got to stop. And all our money had gone anyway. I said, well, why? He said, come with me. So I sort of went into some kind of, well, it wasn't a partnership. I went to work for him, and I got to sort of go in that in the open and swing an axe. Although I took a lot of doing first, because their axes were £7, and I could just about lift them up.
Yes.
And I got so I loved it, and after about a year, my strength was coming back, and my figure was coming back, and I kept there for about 12 years.
Yes.
Then my brother died, and he left the business all to be.
Right.
No money paid or nothing. He just gave it to me.
Yes.
So you had
work. Did you find during those early years that you had any problems that you could relate back to your prisoner experiences?
I'd done my best to forget I'd ever been a prisoner. And if anybody say, was you in the... I said, no. Say, not me, that was one of my brothers. It was a dodgy issue because I didn't want to speak about it.
Yeah.
And then when I had cancer, the old doctor said to me, he said, you're a strange man. He told me on the night before what he's going to do. He's going to cut me down here and that. He said, you don't seem worried. I said, well, I'll tell you something. I said, the Japs couldn't kill me. I said, I'm bloody sure you're not going to either. And he'd done the operation, and after that he used to come to my bed and have a cup of coffee every morning.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I wrote that book, because I got home and I was cut down there, and I wasn't allowed to do anything. I thought, so I didn't know what to do.
Oh.
So I didn't want to sit there and do nothing.
So how old were you then when you had this operation, Harold? How long after the war was that?
Well, quite a time. So after I finished with the wood business.
So you really haven't talked about your experiences at all?
No.
No.
95 when I went in hospital.
Right, as late as that?
Yeah.
1995?
Yeah.
So that was what, 50 years after the war had finished?
Yeah. I forgot. I was in such good physical shape then, you know, for burning the wood and going out every morning about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and swinging his axe.
Yes.
I had a reputation of being the best axeman around here in Suffolk.
Yes.
I used to get all the council work. I used to get all the work I could handle, really.
Yeah.
And then we got so we'd run out of trees.
But nobody knew you'd been a POW in the forest.
No, I didn't speak about it. And another thing I'd done was take up darts.
Right.
Because and I got so good, I got in the semi-final of the News of the World. I beat all the world champions.
Yes.
And I got made Suffolk, captain of Suffolk. And I finished up with 275 trophies.
Wow.
And they're all upstairs now. I got so good.
Mm.
You know, through playing darts.
How did you feel after you'd written your story down?
I felt a lot better.
Did you?
Yeah.
Can you describe what that felt like?
Well, it felt as if a big weight had been lifted from me, you know. I didn't have to sort of, when I was on my own, think about it, because I'd done everything in my life I could not to think about it. I played darts,
yeah.
You know, and darts was to me it was a scientific game. Found it so I could sort of pitch quite easy. Because a lot of dart players, especially when they get high, they start shaking and that, but I didn't do anything like that. I just pitched. And I discovered the best way to stand and the best way to pitch and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd done everything I could not to think about it. And then when I wrote it down, that seems to be a big weight that's gone from my mind. You know, I thought, well, other people will know through this book. And that didn't sort of worry me anymore. You know, people asked me questions.